Who or what are the Barrow Whites? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek, where we break down The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, and more in nerdy detail. If you're new here, welcome. The Barrow Whites only appear for a chapter in The Lord of the Rings and were omitted from the Peter Jackson films entirely, but they were undoubtedly one of the most dangerous early encounters that the hobbits faced, and one of the swords they emerged with plays a hugely important role later in the story. Let's start by quickly reminding ourselves about what happened. After spending some time with Tom Bombadil in their route out of the Shire, the hobbits head off towards the East Road to Bree. That means north, across country from Tom's house, skirting the edges of the Barrow Downs. Tom warns them, "Keep to the green grass. Don't you go a-meddling with old stone or cold wights or prying in their houses, unless you be strong folk with hearts that never falter." He said this more than once, and he advised them to pass barrows on the west side if they chanced to stray near one. He also taught them a song to sing if they should run into difficulty. The hobbits set off okay, but then decide to have a picnic leaning against a standing stone on the east side, which turns into a nap, and when they awake, a mist has risen up. They lose their way, lose track of each other, and end up caught in a barrow. Sam, Merry and Pippin are asleep, dressed in burial clothes. Frodo alone thinks to sing Tom's song, and sure enough, Tom Bombadil bursts in and rescues them with seemingly complete power over the white. Tom's power and amazingness is not really the focus of this video. Yes, it's fascinating, but let's park it for now and focus on what's happening here beyond that. And let's start with the Barrow Downs themselves. Burial mounds like this and standing stones are actually quite common in the parts of England that Tolkien frequented, a clear inspiration for this part of his sub-creation. The area we know as the Barrow Downs in Middle-earth is an area of low hills with no trees, bordered by the Old Forest to the west and the Great East Road to the north, in that hinterland between the Shire and Bree. Atop many of those small hills were barrows, burial mounds, put there by some of the earliest humans back in the First Age, so thousands of years before the time of the Lord of the Rings. Exactly who was buried there is lost in the mists of time. When, at the tail end of the Second Age and start of the Third Age, some survivors of Numenor, Elendil and his folk, founded the Kingdom of Arnor, the Barrowlands fell within the new southern borders, and the Dúnedain there treated the lands with great respect, honouring their fallen ancestors. The Barrowlands were then where they buried their own honoured dead, kings and great heroes. The early years of the Third Age in the north were troubled times, however, with the Witch King of Angmar slowly instigating division in the Northern Kingdom, which split into three. The Barrowlands fell under the rule of Cardolan. In 1409, the Witch King invaded and defeated Cardolan, though a few hardy survivors clung onto life in the Old Forest and the Barrowlands. We should probably just emphasise here that at this point, the Barrowlands were still just hills with burial mounds on them. There was nothing particularly scary or magical about them, and the survivors of Cardolan lived there for the next 250 years or so. At which point we get the next stage of the Witch King's plans to eradicate the Northern Kingdom. The Great Plague swept through the land. Whether or not the Witch King was behind that, he capitalised on it, sending evil spirits to the Barrowlands to prevent that land being used as a refuge. Those evil spirits are what we know as the Barrow Whites. So we should be clear straight away, the Barrow Whites are not anything to do with the ancient dead who have been laid to rest in the Barrowlands. They are a kind of magical or spiritual parasite tied to that land, but not, as far as we know, originally of it. And they remained tied to that land for the next 1,500 years or so. That's why there are no settlements in the otherwise seemingly quite fertile and pleasant lands between the Shire and Bree, south of the Great East Road. Humans and hobbits alike avoided the area, and it seems that over time the Whites themselves slowly settled down, if that's the right way of saying it. Fast forwarding to the time of the Lord of the Rings, at the start of the story, you'll remember that the Ringwraiths were out searching for the Ring as the Black Riders and homing in on the Shire and Baggins. The Witch King remembered what he had let loose all that time ago and roused the Barrow Whites to once more serve his will. This time, they were to keep a watch out for anyone who might be the Ringbearer. Without that intervention, the hobbits probably wouldn't have had so much trouble. But they did. And it seems that the white who caught them took them to perhaps the most important barrow of them all, that of the last Prince of Cardolan. We think this because Merry, when he awoke, recalls that he had dreamed of being attacked by the men of Carn Doom, that's Angmar's capital, and his heart was pierced by a spear. And later, when Tom Bombadil turns up and sets out the treasure of the barrow, there are a lot of impressive things there, including a brooch from a long-dead lady he wishes to remember. So, what are those wights? Well, they are clearly creations of the Witch King, spirits of some kind bound to the land of the Barrowlands. They can appear to mortals, and this is probably the best description we have of them from Frodo's perspective. A tall, dark figure like a shadow against the stars. It leaned over him. He thought there were two eyes, very cold though lit with the pale fire that seemed to come from some remote distance. Then a grip stronger and colder than iron seized him. The icy touch froze his bones, and he remembered no more. So spectral, but still existing in our realm and capable of a firm grip. Scary, it goes without saying. And this is where I enter the realms of my own theorising, rather than accepted Tolkien lore, but I'm feeling confident about this one. The Barrow Wights are powered by ring magic. This is how Tom Bombadil describes them to the hobbits. A shadow come out of dark places far away, and the bones were stirred in the mounds. Barrow Wights walked in the hollow places with a clink of rings on cold fingers. Stone rings grinned out of the ground like broken teeth in the moonlight. Elsewhere in the adventures of Tom Bombadil, we get this description of them. "I'll give your otter fell to Barrow Wights. They'll tour you, then smother you in gold rings. Your mother, if she saw you, she'd never know her son, unless 'twas by a whisker. Nay, don't tease old Tom, until you be far brisker." In another poem, this: "Out fled Barrow Wight through the window leaping, through the yard over wall like a shadow sweeping. Uphill wailing went back to leaning stone rings, back under lonely mound, rattling his bone rings." Again and again, rings. And in our story, the Wights had laid out Sam, Merry and Pippin and dressed them with, among other things, many rings. Why is this important? Because the person who had created and loosed these wights on the Barrowlands was himself a wight dominated by ring magic. He's a very clever magic user with centuries to ponder the magic that bound him. Is it really a surprise that he might replicate his master's spells? All of which suggests that the wights are wights, as the name suggests, undead, preserved well beyond their natural lifespan, animated by the Witch King, though not particularly free to do their own thing, just echoes of their own past, and tied inextricably to the land they inhabit. The Witch King may have roused them to capture the Ringbearer, but when one of them does capture the Ringbearer, they don't seem to alert the Nazgul. Instead, they seemingly try to recreate the original inhabitants of the graves, dressing them in funeral clothes, and were about to enact their own execution, as if they are powered by memory and long-forgotten lore rather than directly controlled by the Lord of the Nazgul. When Tom Bombadil rescues them, he lays out on the ground the treasures of that barrow and gives to the hobbits swords from the hall. For each of the hobbits, he chose a dagger, long, leaf-shaped and keen, of marvellous workmanship, damasked with serpent forms in red and gold. They gleamed as he drew them from their black sheaths, wrought of some strange metal, light and strong, and set with many fiery stones. Whether by some virtue in these sheaths or because of the spell that lay on the mound, the blades seemed untouched by time, unrusted, sharp, glittering in the sun. Then he told them that these blades were forged many long years ago by men of Western Ess. They were foes of the Dark Lord, but they were overcome by the evil king of Carn Doom in the land of Angmar. Merry kept hold of this sword all the way through until the Battle of the Pelennor Fields, where he found himself behind the Witch King, the very wraith who had been the great foe of the people who lived in the Barrowlands. This is what we read of that sword after Merry had used it on the Witch King. "And behold, there lay his weapon, But the blade was smoking like a dry branch that has been thrust in a fire, and as he watched it, it writhed and withered and was consumed. So passed the sword of the Barrowdowns, work of Western Esse. But glad would he have been to know its face who wrought it slowly long ago in the North Kingdom, when the Dúnedain were young, and chief among their foes was the dread realm of Angmar and its sorcerer king. No other blade, not though mightier hands had wielded it, would have dealt that foe a wound so bitter, cleaving the undead flesh, breaking the spell that knit his unseen sinews to his will. Merry would never have had that sword, would never have been able to wound the Witch King like that, if the Witch King himself had not roused those Barrow-wights and the hobbits had been captured. There is a clear and rather delicious irony to this. Millennia ago, the last princes of Cardolan, faced with the threat of the Witch King but still holding on to the last vestiges of forgotten lore from Numenor, forged swords that would be particularly effective against wraiths and the Witch King himself, seemingly severing the dark magic forged link that held their soul to this mortal plane. They never got to use them. Or if they did, then the Witch King himself eluded them, and destroyed their homes and loved ones in the process. For perhaps 1600 years, those swords lay undisturbed and forgotten in their tombs. Then the Witch King roused the Barrow-wights once more, who captured the hobbits, Tom Bombadil rescued them, and the powerful wraith-killing swords entered the world of the living once more, and ended the Witch King's power forever. If you'd like to watch more videos breaking down Tolkien's Legendarium, there's a link on the left of your screen now to a playlist of my other videos. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.